Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
Sheffield Live at 93.2 FM and on digital. I'm Martin.
And I'm Denise. To the film show. Have we got a packed show for you today?
It's pretty much an all review show, isn't it? Seemingly, yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to kick off with the news that if you have access to Apple TV or Apple Plus, as it's known, you can indulge yourself in the director's cut of Napoleon. Ridley Scott's recent historical epic about the life of Napoleon Bonaparte, and there's an extra 50 minutes.
Oh, have you indulged, Martin?
I'm halfway through it. I watched it in the cinema, and I thought it was very good. I thought it was great fun.
I saw it in the cinema. I can't remember if we reviewed it or if that was before us.
Oh, I think it was before we came back on air, I think. Yeah. I asked Ridley to hold it until we were back on air, but
he's not pliable,
he's so
in
impatient,
those ways.
Isn't he? Anyway. And I think I'm 2 hours into it because I started watching it quite late last night, and I'm into it. It's fantastic.
So what's the benefit of the?
Well, it's loads more about the revolution, what happened during those revolution years, which I think was a bit sketchy.
Yeah,
and you weren't sure whose side people were on, who was here, who was there. There seems to be more in some of the action sequences, but one of the great things about it, there's loads more Josephine in it.
Ah, so yes tonight, Josephine.
Yes, you see a lot more of what happened to her during the revolution, and you just see a lot more of her side of the story. And you've got to say, you know, Scott does this a lot. Kingdom of Heaven, he put another hour into that when it went on to DVD. The Counselor, you can get a version of that with an extra 25 minutes, and I think that's one of his best ever movies, the long version of that. And, you know, how many times has he been back to Blade Runner? Although he makes that shorter every time he goes to...
So what's the total running time now?
It's now on 3.5 hours.
Ooh. But so that's a make-your-own-interval time.
It very much is. It's a nice little bank holiday film. We could put it on at midday and finish off about 4 o'clock.
And that's on Apple.
That's on Apple.
Excellent.
What's next?
Well, you were telling me Keanu Reeves has been up to some business.
Keanu Reeves?
Keanu, like, I can't have anything said against Keanu.
Have I ever said anything?
I don't know.
No, I haven't.
I love him.
I haven't. Even though John Wick 4 was the most bum-numbing film I've seen in many years, up until this week.
Do you know, there was a song in the early 90s by a band called the Voodoo Dolls, which was just basically a bit of a punk girl song, just musing on how to say his name.
Yeah. Keanu, was it?
Keanu, Kanunu, Kanunu, Kawooey. How do you say your name? Brilliant
because
song.
Because, like Jesse Plemons, you can also put films into good Keanu.
And bad Keanu. Keanu.
Neon Are Demon, bad Keanu. Anyway, he's written a book.
Has he?
Yes, it's not like a diary. He's written a novel.
All on his own?
No.
Uh-huh.
Him and the very well-regarded science fiction writer, China, and I think of Mieville. See, I've got a bit of a French accent.
That's easy for you to say.
He may not be French at all.
Right.
Anyway, they have written a science fiction novel, and I'll give you some of the bump to it. A mind-blowing epic from Keanu Reeves and China Mieville, unlike anything these two genre-bending pioneers have created before. There you go.
Excellent.
Also, Reeves and Mieville's novel turns a literary comic book into a meditation on what it means to be truly alive. Both affecting and enigmatic.
Now, you see, what happened there was when you said Reeves and Mia, I went into immediately Reeves and Mortimer and imagined a surreal book as written by Reeves and Mortimer.
Both have written books. Therefore, for all we know, I was saying about a man with a stick down there somewhere.
But what's on the end of the stick?
So anyway, that's out in hardback now, unless you want to wait until it comes out in paperback or there's a Radio 4 book adaptation of it.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued with a qualifying, let's just see.
Let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, what I was excited about by seeing this week is the announcement of, so during lockdown, Edgar Wright was, you know, lots of people were trying to get active on Twitter that couldn't do things like make films anymore.
Yeah.
So I think Edgar Wright put a call out for your favourite films from directors and actors and whatever. He wrote to Martin Scorsese during the pandemic asking for tips on lesser-known British films. Scorsese, being Scorsese, came back to him with a list of 50 of his personal favourites. So not just a couple, just like, here's my list, here's the order, here's why. Which is what I love about Scorsese, is he just knows all about film, doesn't he, from all angles.
Oh, yeah, he's a bit like you and me. He's been watching films all his life.
He's a bit like you and me. I don't think anyone...
you know, I passed on the taxi driver, Scott.
And now a season of those films has been selected for a season at BFI on South Bank. I wonder if it's going to tour any of these films as well, which often happens. And there's a rather lovely interview with the pair of them that's been published this week. You can see it in full on the BFI website, where basically they talk about some of these films and why they're in there. There's some, we know a lot of them, don't we? But they're sort of selected as hidden gems of British cinema.
I think if you know anything about British cinema, there's not many here that would completely surprise you, although it's like called Brief Ecstasy, which I've never heard about, from the 1930s.
Well, the thing, a lot of the films, so it's in October, and a lot of them will be screened on 35mm prints.
Yep.
And there is also, it says it, a rare nitrate screening of Went the Day, Now, Went the Day Well is one of my absolute favourites.
The best British film made during the Second World War for me, and not made by a British director.
No, it's Italian, isn't he?
Brazilian. Cavalcanti,
I've just heard the name and gone, that sounds Italian.
That sounds Italian, didn't it?
But didn't he do, he did a lot of, he did some like Dickens stuff as well, didn't he?
Cavalcanti is probably, one of the things he's very famous for is the ventriloquist dummy section of
Dead of Night.
Yeah. And he did a great, great gangster movie shortly after the Second War called They Made Me a Fugitive with Trevor Howard.
Right.
Which is so nasty for its time. But yeah, he was one of these people who didn't make a lot of films, but he was very active in Ealing, in sort of creating that Ealing approach and bringing in an experimental side, because he was he dabbled with the surrealist set during the 30s and 40s as well.
Well, I think so. Looking at this list again, he's gone for something that is a bit more subjective. It says he sidestepped the kitchen sink realism of the British New Wave.
Which
we all know
good,
about that. Taken as read. So he's looking at instead on titles from directors in the 30s through to the 70s and sort of studio linked stuff.
One of your favourites is in there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yield to the Night.
Yield to the Night. Yeah.
And I remember watching that on TV, because a lot of these older films were on TV in the 80s. Fabulous film. That's about the Ruth Ellis murder trial. She was the last woman, spoilers, but she was the last woman to be, now is it hanged or hung? Hanged. Can't remember.
Hanged.
She was the last woman to be hanged in the UK.
One which I picked up on, which is a great favourite of mine, is Station 6, Sahara, which is a steamy film, which is set out in a pumping station, an oil pumping station in the middle of the Sahara Desert, with a number of British male actors. And who should turn up but Carol Baker in a Cadillac and a bikini? All hell is going to break loose here. sweaty and it's seething and it's quite sexy.
There's some interesting, there's Carol Reed stuff in there as well. Night Train to Munich. I've never seen that. I like the look of it.
Yep. Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. Oh, I remember the poster for that one. Hello.
So, yeah, it looks like a really intriguing little list. And I imagine there'll be a glossy book to go with that at some point.
And it's just what you need to get away from the canonical British titles.
Yeah, which is nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with them, but I must admit, I get a bit tired of the kitchen sink dramas nowadays, you know?
It's not all we did.
No, no.
So, yeah, that's interesting. That starts in October. So if you're a London Way-bound type person, might be worth seeing those on 35mm. Interesting stuff. What we got on the front trailer trash?
Oh, hang on, sorry, we just missed one. The Donald Trump film, which was at Cannes, The Apprentice, which...
You've seen that, haven't you?
No, I haven't seen
it
yet.
No.
But nobody wanted to pick it up back in May. No distributor would pick it up.
Well, it's a bit of a touchy time, isn't it?
It was, and I think the Trump camp actually put up a cease and desist order about it. The effect of Kamala is everywhere, and now it's been picked up for distribution, and it's being released in the United States on October the 11th. What's that, about 3 or 4 weeks?
Wait a minute, what date's the election?
November the 6th or the 5th?
Oh, yeah, Tuesday the 5th of November.
Yeah, he's not happy at the moment, is the orange one. He's going to be seething when this one comes out. So it's funny how current events can suddenly turn around the fortunes of a movie. There you are. Trailer trash then.
Trailer trash. Well, there's some... Oh, these look pretty... Are we going to start with Heretic?
Heretic.
I like the look of this.
Another A24 movie.
Yeah. Another don't go into that house, you're doing, what you're thinking of movie.
Yes. Don't knock on his door. Of course, who should open it but Hugh Grant in a lovely Christmas sweater.
And I'd say, I'm going to say that this is not the Hugh Grant of Paddington 2 that is, although he is villainous
this is
in Paddington 2.
Hugh Grant, is it?
No. Oh, he is. He is bad looking in this.
Bad Hugh.
I like the idea of this. He clearly didn't give a goddamn, like, throughout most of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And he has that sort of assumption of someone, I don't know why I'm doing this, but someone likes it. But now he's like, I don't give a damn and I don't care who knows it.
Yeah.
I am.
He does
seem
one of these actors who can just turn up, camera rolls, and he's there. He's in it.
Yeah.
You can't imagine him doing a lot of method training or anything with it.
No.
Yep, action, and he's there. And, you know, over the past, what, 6-7 years, he's had an amazing run of films and TV shows. And this looks as though it's going to be another interesting one.
Mm. Yeah.
And our other trailer trash is The Man Who Doesn't Sleep.
Mr. Willem Dafoe.
In another film?
When does he? I don't know.
He's in one next week. He's in Beetlejuice.
Oh, kind of excited about that. But Nosferatu, the trailer looks fantastic. It's back with Robert Eggers.
Robert. The man who brought us The Lighthouse, The Witch, and The Northman. And it looks... It's obviously Nosferatu. It's a reworking of the... Going back to Murnau and the 1920s silent film. But it's about a vampire in his castle. And it looks pretty amazing.
It's pretty epic, doesn't
it? And when you think Herzog's made a film of Nosferatu, and this one, it looks brilliant. And I think it's out November, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Me too. Right, should we go for a bit of music?
Please.
I have picked the music this week, and we have gone to France, and we're looking at a 2006 film, Science of Sleep, and this is from the original soundtrack by Jean-Michel Bernard.
So you've picked some music.
Oh, don't start. Do not start
I'm
on
just
me.
Saying, That's an amazing concept. Where did you get that idea from?
Oh, shut your cake off.
Right. Stunned. I tell you, stunned by this.
We're going to hear. Well, you might be stunned. You might not like it.
No.
we're going to hear from the beginning of the film. Now, bearing in mind, this is a film about dreams, imagination mixing with reality. So it's a little bit out there. We're going to hear from the opening a couple of tracks.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Well, you wanted me to put something with film in it, and there it is. So that was the voice of Gael Garcia Bernal, who is the lead actor in Michel Gondry's 2006 Science of Sleep.
That was weird.
It's a little bit out there. I went to see this film when I was visiting Hong Kong in 2006. Mm-hmm. I went with my sister, and we just fell in love with it. but immediately fell in love with the soundtrack and bought it as soon as I could. And probably I'm much more familiar with the soundtrack than the film. I re-watched it this week because I knew I was going to talk about it. And I was like, I'm not sure if it holds up narratively.
But it's
visually very exciting and fun.
So Gondry had previously done Eternal Sunshine, which had been quite a big hit.
Yeah.
And I think he was given free rein to do...
Yeah, because, of course, that was with Mr. Kaufman, wasn't it? Charlie Kaufman.
He's a very imaginative filmmaker. He's made loads of great music videos, hasn't he?
And it's visually exciting. Puppets, animation, dream-like. The dream sequences are fantastic in it. Yeah. And they merge into the real life of this character. I mean, basically, all it is... Gael García Bernal plays Stefan, who at the beginning of the film comes back to Paris having lived in Mexico with his father, who's recently died, and this is why he's dreaming of Doc Ellington, as we heard there. He meets his neighbour, Charlotte Gainsbourg, who is Stephanie, who is an artist and model maker, and he is immediately attracted to her.
Who wouldn't be?
She's absolutely beguiling. But if you look at it now, you kind of go, well, she said no, leave her alone. So it depends, I think, how much you are charmed by them as to whether you let that narrative go.
Yeah.
I loved the film at the time and I still am very fond of it now. You've seen it, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I think it's a charming piece. And maybe sometimes I can sort of maybe not see such things as, oh yeah, you know, he's still, because I'm thinking, well, it's supposed to be a romance, isn't it?
Yeah.
And not that you're, you don't think about it as such, but I don't know, maybe it's easy for a man to sort of not be quite as sensitive to that as what a woman is.
Oh, well, I wasn't at the time. Totally.
It's far more we think about such things a lot more now, don't we?
But Michel Gondry, since then, he still does his own thing, but he hasn't really done anything sort of major. But there is
such a disaster.
Well, there's the film Atlantis coming up, which looks like a musical biography, which he's directing. It's got some quite interesting... it's, you know, the musician Pharrell?
Is he a young, popular singer?
Well, I think he was in the 2010s, maybe. But that's coming up, and it's got, like, an interesting cast with it. You've got people like Divine Joy... she was in The Holdovers. Janelle Monáe, Halle Berry... So it looks like quite a fun big deal. I'm interested to see that. That's next year anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to play another track from The Science of Sleep now. Since I've set the scene so well, I'm not going to try and pronounce it though.
Ow!
You're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and online on digital. And that just...
I'll be whistling that one when I get on my way home,
Martin,
on the bus.
Not all dreams are good dreams.
No.
Some dreams are nightmares where your hands are massive, and that's what that one is.
Yeah. You'd have to have been there for that.
I love it. Anyway.
You dream you've got massive hands and you're trying to do
he's trying to do his tight... Yeah. Oh, no, I will. I will dream about that tonight.
Anxiety dream.
Oh. Right. We've got some reviews for you. We've
TV.
Got so many reviews that we've started off with a bit of telly. Have you... Did you watch Sherwood Series 1?
I did.
Yeah. And so this is...
A second series.
Yeah, a second series. The first two episodes are out on iPlayer now, and I think they're just releasing two when it's broadcast at the weekend.
Yeah, it's coming out Sunday and Monday nights, so that'll be this weekend and next weekend, so it'll be out. And I mean, I must admit, I didn't think there would be a second series. It all seemed wrapped up, but...
Well, we've moved on.
To start
but we've moved on. So, if you're not familiar with the first, we won't spoil it because it's all there on iPlayer. But the first series is set in a Nottinghamshire coal mining village, still completely contemporary. But it's already a fractured community, and then there's a manhunt for someone who is randomly, it seems, or maybe not randomly, shooting people with a crossbow.
Yep,
and then it maybe is linked to a search for a spy cop. And there's the idea that there was a police planted into the community during the miners' strike. This series moves on with some of the same characters. We're looking at some new characters. And it's more about the legacy of what it's like being in a community that has been starved of for a couple of generations of
lost
full-time
industry,
employment.
Yeah. Lost, and... the onset of a drug culture and crime, and also because Nottingham had a reputation of being of having a lot of gun crime about 10, 15 years ago, and it's pulling upon that, isn't it, into its...
So I've seen the first couple of episodes.
Yeah.
And I'm hooked again already, largely due to the second episode, which was quite a thrilling...
The first episode I was a little unsure, but the second episode just grabs you by the scruff of the neck.
I think the first episode,
doesn't it? And you never want to go there.
You don't want to go to Skeg Vegas, no. Especially if someone says it's a safe house.
Yes.
No. But you've got some of the key and some key British TV actors. Lorraine Ashbourne is as brilliant as usual.
Yeah.
Philip Jackson. Leslie Manville pops up again. David Morrissey is no longer a policeman in this, but he is now working in,
as
like
a police community.
But then you've got some new faces. So Stephen Delane and Monica Dolan play this.
Could I just say that Monica Dolan is the scariest woman on British television right now?
She is.
She is terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely petrifying. Christine Bottomley turns up as like a long lost daughter. And then you've got
David Harewood, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and then you've got Robert Lindsay and Robert Emms playing father and son of.
That's
like,
got to develop that bit, isn't
yeah,
it?
But yeah.
You know it's not going to be good.
So I'm another rate for that, yeah. Definitely.
Yes, stay with it till episode two, and then you won't be able to.
Yeah, you'll be waiting like I am for bated breath.
Next up was a big budget Netflix series.
Well, we mentioned this last week, didn't we?
Chaos. I wish we hadn't mentioned it.
I'm sorry, everybody.
I was disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, so it depends how subtle or how. How narratively engaging you want your TV drama to be. Now, this seems to me the opposite of Sherwood in that it doesn't invest any time in its characters. You've got all these like amazing characters in this. What did you think?
I thought it was smug, self-satisfied, as Marquis Smith would say. I was completely left cold with it. Well, it's putting Greek mythology and characters from Greek mythology into a modern-day setting on the island of Crete. Would you say that's pretty much it in
yeah,
a nutshell?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got, just so pleased
you've got
with
the
itself.
King of the Gods, of, Zeus, Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum.
Who, playing, interestingly,
playing Jeff
was.
Goldblum.
But it was going to be Hugh Grant. Now, he either claimed he had a back injury and didn't to get out of it,
yeah.
Or he had a back injury. Because it doesn't... He's up there, people visit him occasionally, he clicks his fingers and they arrive. Stephen Delane is Prometheus.
Again, he's getting some work, is Steve?
Yeah, well, he's also in Sherwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a scary wife.
Yeah. Ooh.
Well, like I said, I won't be watching another episode of this.
Well, I've actually stuck with it and watched five or six. I've watched five episodes out of the... Eight.
Have you done anything productive this week?
I've watched a lot of films. Watched a lot of films and telly, mate. Only for you guys. Only for you. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And visually, production design, fantastic. But I struggled to care about this. All these big names just turn up, and like Eddie Izzard, bad. Billy Piper, love her, but she's literally in it for milliseconds. Occasionally.
Was she married to Lawrence Fox?
Oh, don't bring that up.
I think I will.
Oh, no.
Billy Piper was married to Lawrence Fox.
Leave that out of it. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
Don't tar.
Don't.
I'm putting my hands up now.
Yeah.
Putting my, yeah. It's got no substance to it, has it?
Yeah.
It's a real shame. But it looks fantastic. If you want to just have something to watch where you don't have to think... Yeah, fine.
There's enough of that on.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm going to limit you to 2 minutes on this.
Yeah, please, I don't know if I'll be... the latest, you know, pointless Netflix big budget movie, which could never have held any space in cinemas, is out. Hailey Berry and Mark Wahlberg in something called The Union, which they've spent a fortune on. Has some nice location work in London.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of ridiculous gun battles. And... I can hardly remember a thing about it. It was just so bland, dull, and pointless. And I'm going to leave it there.
Oh, okay. Well, in which case, I'll have another song, which is another one of Martin's favourites. But I will now rescue you from that.
So, Stéphane Mirou, we have a little surprise for you to do.
No.
A song for her.
I'm playing and I'm having such fun. I wish it could happen to me. But if you rescue me, I'll never have to be alone again. All the cars drive so fast and the people are mean, and sometimes it's hard to find food. Let me into your world. You warm and amused. All the things we can do in the rain. someday I know someone will look into my eyes and say hello. You're a very special kitten, so if you rescue me, I'll never have to be alone again. I'll never have to be alone again. I'll never have to be alone again.
Hello, you're listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and you can catch up by seeking us out on the Sheffield Live website. And that was If You Rescue Me by Gael García Bernal. And if you think that sounds like another song,
it does.
After Hours by the Velvet Underground, it's pretty much a note for note copy. But there is a reason for it.
Yeah, Chanson de Chat. So this is, he's obviously gone to sleep hearing After Hours, Velvet Underground. And in the dream,
he
performs that, but it's about rescuing stray cats.
It starts off as a song for
Stephanie, and then, yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Dreamy.
Is that dog still in the coffin with Elena?
Oh dear. So I had a good week at the cinema. Well, I went to see a film called Touch last night, which is Icelandic director Baltasar Kormákur. It stars Egil Olafsson, Kóki, and Palmi Kormákur. That's the same name as the younger.
If you're in Iceland, you will be getting away with that pronunciation.
Hey, I just said it quick and confidently, yeah. And you just killed it. But so the director is directing his own son in this film as well. Yeah, it is basically the story. It's an old-fashioned romance. And basically, if you watched Past Lives and went, well, they're a bit young to be feeling this nostalgic about their childhood, these features a man in his 70s who is a widow living on Iceland. It's just as the pandemic is sort of about to hit. And he goes on a one-man emotional odyssey to find out a lost love from when he was living in London in the late 60s. So when he was living in London in the late 60s, he was a very handsome young man and dropped out of university and met somebody, a young Japanese woman. And that's as much as I want to say, really. It's told in sort of a flashback. So as the flashback develops to that time, his search is developing as well. It is very sort of low key. It's so clearly written based on a book. But it's if you like your drama poignant, but not, there's no shouting, there's no, like, it's beautifully done, poignantly done, and I thoroughly recommend it.
A rate, then?
A rate. An old-fashioned romantic rate.
You don't get many of them on this
show,
do you?
It is 2 hours long, and I suppose if you're, don't bother if you want, you know, action and drama.
Yeah.
Like, but it does, I think in the final third of the film, it really does pay off the time that you've put in at the beginning of it as well. That's my tip.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I also went to see another film that I'm going to generously rate. So Sing Sing, we mentioned last week about this, didn't we? So it's based on a very real story. It features actors playing themselves, alongside Colman Domingo, Clarence Macklin, and Sean San Jose. It's directed by Greg Quidar. It is, so Sing Sing, obviously the high security, maximum security prison. There is a program running there, which Colman Domingo plays a character who is the founding member of this program.
Mm-hmm.
which is rehabilitation through art. So they basically put on theatre. They put on shows every 6 months and they work with people from outside coming in. But, you know, you could think, well, that sounds like it could be a cheese fest. But do you remember when I said last week, it looks like from the trailer like a documentary almost.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of filmed in this sort of verite style. It is, it's like, it's got so many themes within it. It's got so many emotional touch points in it. It's got so much for you to think about, but it doesn't hit you over the head with a hammer saying, think about why these men are in prison, or think about the injustice of this, or think about... It just leads you into this place quite gently. Some very really, really stirring performances, but it's more about like resilience and brotherhood and finding these relationships with people. And obviously, I'm a sucker for this, but the transformative nature of art and how, you know, it's meaningful. It's very beautifully done, very tenderly done. If you are watching it, make sure you stay for the end credits, because there's a little bit of information about like some footage of the real productions.
Right.
Because we follow it over the course of, I suppose, 6 months.
Yeah.
Looking at a production that they've written that's a comic production. I highly rate it. Properly highly.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I sing, sing about Sing, Sing.
All right, my turn. 30 years ago, the director Alex Proyas...
The stopwatch is on, by the way.
We've got time for me to have a full-on rant here. Made a very... very highly admired adaptation of a comic book called The Crow. And in many ways, the film is remembered not so much just for the quality of it, but for the fact that its star, Brandon Lee, died during the film's production in another one of these bizarre incidents where there seems to be live ammunition in the guns that they're using on set.
Why?
I don't know. How does that happen? Obviously, this has just happened with the Alex Baldwin film, Rust. There are a couple of terrible sequels to it. But the actual movie of The Crow, I always thought was a terrific film. And maybe some of that was due to the fact of this tragic accident, because it just gets on with it. They had to make the film with some odds and sods of some outtakes, some very, very crude CGI, and, you know, filming someone from the back. And for the past 15 years, this remake, reboot, reimagining of The Crow has been gestating, and it's now been unleashed upon an unsuspecting world with Bill Skarsgård as Eric Draven, The Crow, and FKA Twigs as Shelley. Well, I believe FKA Twigs is another one of these young singer types, I believe. It is truly the most awful film I have seen in a very long time.
Oh.
I'll say this is probably going to be the worst film of 2024.
No.
My worst film.
Okay, all right.
As I say, the original really gets on with it. So there's not a lot of preamble as to why Eric and Shelley are in love, probably because they hadn't filmed all those scenes. This takes over an hour for two people, Eric and Shelley, to have this pure love, because they've both got tattoos and they're both into drugs. And there's this convoluted story as to why they just... I've no idea why he comes back to life, or why there's a crow, or why he has to go back to hell to get her. And there's like the last 20 minutes, there's this incredibly long, tedious action sequence with some... And I think I'm getting a bit sensitive to violence in my old age. Like,
yeah.
Really horrible, horrible violence. Which, why this don't need... And the original Crow had this, like, gunfire sequence at the end of the film, which sort of went into a delirious rage. It was so exciting. This is just what are you going to do now? We said you're going to cut off now. The acting is terrible. The direction is terrible. It is a complete and utter waste of everybody's time. And I'm going to implore you not to go and see this, because I am putting the curse, the film show curse, on The Crow. And I am hoping that, like Borderlands, by this time next week, The Crow
will be gone.
Will not be able to be seen.
Troublous no longer.
On any cinema screen in Sheffield. This is one of those films where it's just an utter waste of time. You shake your head and you think, why? Just why?
Okay. In which case, I think it
was quite restrained.
Yeah, it was. I'm actually quite proud of you.
Thank you.
I can't leave it on that.
I don't know if I've been confusing it, but I'm going to slate it.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I think we got that.
I can't leave it on that note, though. So I am going to bring you a review of something I absolutely was beguiled by, The Count of Monte Cristo. Now, it's obviously a classic Alexander Dumas tale. It's nearly 3 hours long, this, just under 3 hours. It didn't feel like 3 hours when I was in the cinema. I'm not massively familiar, I suppose, with The Count of Monte Cristo. I know the basic story. Someone was in prison, they come out unjustly in prison, and they come out and exact revenge on the people that have conspired to put him there. It is, from start to finish, so lavish. I don't know what the budget is in this, but it is massive. I don't know how they can possibly recoup it. But I think it's the writers of it did do The Three Musketeers a year or so ago.
That was really good. It's the same
writers. I think it's a different director, Alexandre de la Patellier and Matthew Delaporte, who is one of the writers. It stars Pierre Ninet, I'm going to say. Or Ninet, as Edmond Dantes. I know,
about,
I do,
you?
Yeah. I do it all the time.
French.
Oui, mais, moi, Pascal. Malheureusement. but it's traditional, it's swashbuckling. Once you get over the first half hour where they're setting everything up, it's dripping with beautiful scenery. I think they filmed a lot in Malta as well as the south of France and some amazing locations. I was totally swept up by it. I think some of the female characters are a lot more interesting than I imagine, a lot less passive than they were in the story, I'm going to guess. It's sassy, it's bold, it wrapped me up completely. And as the Count, so he wears like this weird mask to cover up who he is.
I think I can remember it from like first knowing it. BBC Sunday afternoon adaptation. It used to be on 5 or 6 episodes, didn't it? Yeah.
Well, no expense has been spared on this. And I urge you. I think when I've watched before things like The Count of Monte Cristo back in the 80s, I think Richard Chamberlain was in it, wasn't he?
Yeah. There was one with Leonardo DiCaprio.
I've sort of been put off by it when it's English language actors, so English or American actors playing these parts, and they put on a French voice, a bit like I do. Very bad. Very bad. But when it's
in the next one.
But when they're French actors, got no problem with that. Yeah. It's amazing. It's a wonderful film. Watch it. Don't go and see The Crow. Why go and see The Crow when you can see this? It's brilliant. High rate.
I'm just building up a second breath for The Crow, if you want me to go back to my rent.
Let's have
don't
a bit...
Don't fade me, don't fade me out.
Come on, let's have a little bit more of Science of Sleep.
Yes, let's.
So this is Weekend de Ski. Now, this includes a brief voice in the introduction that you might recognise and you might be quite beguiled by, Martin.
Well, next time I see you, I'll kiss you. Is that what you're asking me?
I mean,
really?
Yeah, you should try.
I should just go out there and kiss you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Go on.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Film Show. I'm Denise. This is Martin.
Hello.
Hello. We're on 93.2 FM, online and on digital on Sheffield Live. So that was Weekend of Ski, part of the soundtrack for Science of Sleep. You heard at the beginning there Charlotte Gainsbourg encouraging Gael Garcia Bernal to just kiss her next time they see each other.
Oh,
but unfortunately, malheureusement, it is just a dream.
I'm woken up from that dream now, thinking of Charlotte Gainsbourg asking me to kiss her.
Go on.
She's got such a lovely voice in English.
I love it. Yeah.
It's almost like it's a bit Cockneyish, but a bit like estuary Cockney. Yeah. You know, she's not like, come on, let's go and do this now, shall we?
Beautiful.
You get on with the rest of the programme.
So okay, he's going into Gainsbourg land. Well, this weekend it's National Cinema Day. So there are £4 tickets everywhere, mostly today. I think some venues are doing it tomorrow as well.
They should
but
be
I think,
everywhere August.
Yeah, there's over...
August 31.
There's over 600 cinemas participating, and in Sheffield it's all of the main cinemas here.
And if you go to Cineworld, you can get in for IMAX and 4DX screenings for £4
so
as well.
So expect the cinema to be quite busy as well, because it would be like Barbie Oppenheimer Day, won't it?
Yeah, although remember The Crow is still out, so you need to avoid that. £4 is still too much.
It's still £4 wasted,
that's
guys.
£4. Yeah, you might as well burn a fiver outside the cinema and
but
then go into what's
else. I think we've given you lots of nice films to take a punt on this week. I mean, if you,
yeah, because I think Borderlands is gone.
Alien Romulus is still on though. Yeah. Haven't seen that yet.
I think The Trap is still scraping around somewhere. But you know, but listen, we've given you a guidelines at least what not to go and see.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. So
the thing you've got to do is not encourage these type of films.
Absolutely,
that's what I think.
Yeah. They've got to learn somehow.
Yes.
But so National Cinema Day, we've only been doing this. This is only the third year we've done this in this country, but it is something that they've regularly been doing on the continent since the 80s.
Cinema always gets a bad rap in this country. Mm. It's not properly recognised as an art form.
I feel like we've picked it up because of maybe getting over COVID as well.
Yeah.
It started in 2022.
Yeah.
But interesting, take the opportunity, go out, go see a couple of films.
Mm?
Yeah, who needs the sun? Come on. So what else is coming out?
You're going to see a Bellatar film, aren't you?
I am. I'm going straight after this because it's only £4. I haven't seen any of them. So, yeah, I'm going to see The Man from London.
That's £4 you will ever spend.
I might get a beer on the way in, if I'm honest. Yeah,
I think it too.
Well,
it's a long film.
Big release on Friday. Beetlejuice.
Let loose.
We're both excited about that, I think.
I don't want to get too excited because it could backfire on me. But Monica Bellucci with that stapled face. I'm quite liking
He's
the idea
for
of that.
That yeah. Well, I'm going to rewatch Beetlejuice this week as well.
I watched it this week, actually, and enjoyed it enormously.
Excellent. I'm excited about Starvacre. I'm going to go and see a preview screening of that on Monday at The Light. So that is Matt Smith and Morfydd Clark. It looks like a 70s type folk horror set in Yorkshire. Directed by Daniel Coccatagliolo. Highly anticipated, it says here, follow-up to his BAFTA-nominated debut, Apostasy. And you weren't massively keen on that.
I just found it a very hard view. It was a difficult film. You could admire it, let's say.
Okay.
I didn't enjoy it.
Okay. What else have we got coming up? I'm very excited for Firebrand. Now, Firebrand is directed by a chap called Karim Enouz. His film a couple of years ago, The Life of Eurydice, I want to say, beautiful filmmaking. It was just visually very exciting. Mm. It stars Alicia Vikander as Catherine Parr, otherwise known as wife number 6 of Henry VIII, played in this film by Mr. Jude Law, looking unrecognisable.
Yes, apparently he even had an authentic smell to him during
oh,
the scenes.
Did, oh, you don't?
Yeah.
He didn't get a bottle of...
What?
It's bad things.
It's bad things.
Bad things.
Bad things. I don't think he washed for several days.
Oh,
no.
God, just try acting. Come on.
How do you act to smell?
Oh, please. Anyway, that aside, I'm very excited for that. What else we got?
Red Rooms. What's that? I don't know that. You put some of these things on it, and I have to admit, I'm completely oblivious to some of these because I had to go and see The Crow this week. It's had a very traumatic psychological effect upon
me. Red Rooms looks like it might have a traumatic psychological effect on you as well. It's like one of those true crime thrillers. Looks a bit ugly. Directed by someone called Pascal Plante.
Is it French?
Oui, c'est français.
Okay.
What else we got? Rattling through him here.
His Three Daughters.
Yep.
Is there something else difficult to pronounce there? Let's just skip over this because...
Well, there's like... this is an American one, I think.
You're not going to have time for your last track.
Oh, okay. Right. Let's get it in there.
Third Man is on at the showroom all week. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Is that it? Is that what we're leaving them with?
Celluloid Springs announces its program
on Thursday. So I'm going to go along to that. We'll have a little bit of a chat about that next week,
yes,
maybe.
We will.
That's at the end of October, but they're announcing the lineup.
Well, that'll be good.
Oh, it's packed.
I'm going to finish off my review of The Crow next week.
Okay.
And
in the meantime, enjoy your films
enjoy
at
your
a
films.
Bargain knockdown price.
£4.
Bye bye.
I want to dedicate this to all the victims.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Come on.
Without them.